Chapter 24 Kuat System, Toriaz Station. Jason sat in the rolling chair with his feet up on the desk before him. He knew that the image he was holocausting would show his boot soles up close, the rest of his seated body at a slightly greater distance, and then Ben, solemnly standing behind his chair.
"A what?" he asked.
The three-dimensional image of an old Twi'lek male, his skin a wrinkled desert tan, his headtails wrapped artistically around his neck, was less than a meter tall, and situated atop the center of the desk. It was large enough for Jason to make out the Twi'lek's expression, one of merry amusement.
"It's a thought," the Twi'lek said. "An idea."
Jason held the grouping of tassels up before him and studied it.
"All of it?"
The Twi'lek's headtails twitched. Then he apparently realized that he wasn't speaking to another of his own kind, and indulged in a cruder, broader gesture. A shrug.
"I don't know," he admitted. "I can only speak for the one at the very bottom."
Jason examined that tassel in greater detail. It was composed of six separate braids of tan and red beads, each one knotted intricately.
"How is it a thought?"
"It's like writing," the Twi'lek said. "A pattern of knots so individualized, so specific, that they can carry thoughts the way writing does. I actually had to take the highest detail holocam scan you sent me of it and run it through a sculpture interpreter, generating a three-dimensional replica in a flexible material before I could interpret it. It must be held, manipulated by touch, in order for its meaning to become clear."
"And its meaning is what?"
"As close as I can translate it into basic, it means, he will strengthen himself through pain."
Jason gave the Twi'lek a close look.
"You look startled, Master Solo."
Jason shook his head.
"I'm not a master. Just a Jedi Knight, for Ollie. I apologize if I've led you to believe that you're speaking with a social equal."
"I do not think in such segregated terms, Jedi Solo."
"As for my startlement, that phrase has echoes of an old Jedi saying, there is no pain where strength lies. Could it actually be translated that way?"
For Ollie shook his head, the gesture deliberate and artificial.
"No, it is closest to, he will strengthen himself through pain."
"And you can't read any of the others?"
"No, they are not Twi'lek. In fact, the one I can comprehend isn't universally Twi'lek. It is a remnant of the Tahuip culture of Ryloth, an ancient subset of our modern culture. We are not one homogeneous people any more than humans are."
"Of course. How long has it been since a recording technique like this was used?"
"Perhaps 500 standard years. Now the technique is known only to a few scholars. I do not elevate myself too much by claiming to be one of three individuals with sufficient knowledge to have translated that item through a reproduction."
Jason considered.
"So these other tassels, if they are not of Twi'lek make..."
"Of Twi'lek cultural origin, at any rate."
"Yes, that's what I meant. Could they still be the same sort of item? A form of writing?"
"Yes. Or, I think, several. They are distinct in the ways they were made, each fabricated through a different technique. I suspect it means that if they all convey messages, each does so through a different method of communication, perhaps from a different world or culture altogether."
Jason gave him a smile.
"I know that this is going to sound lazy,
but is there a central source of knowledge that might be able to decode all of them?"
"You're very good at mind-reading, Forali. Are you Force-sensitive?"
"No. I am merely well acquainted with academic laziness."
The Twi'lek considered.
"I would recommend the world of Lord. It is a repository of academic knowledge, and its people, like my own, have developed a greater facility with nonverbal communication than most. Perhaps it would improve the odds that they have concentrated knowledge in this field. But you must take the item there. I can't guarantee that experts in other fields of communication could interpret the meaning of one of those tassels from a replica.
Jason nodded. Just what I wanted to know. My compliments to you, Forali.
Thank you for bringing me a task suited to my interests. Perhaps, when all is done, you could send me the original item to study.
Forali smiled.
Replicas are never quite as good.
I'll see what I can do. Thank you, and goodbye.
Farewell.
Jason leaned forward to punch the disconnect button, and the hologram of the Twi'lek faded from view. Jason relaxed back into his chair and sat for long moments studying the bottom tassel.
It bothers you, doesn't it?
Ben asked. Jason nodded, absently, and gestured for the boy to sit in the next chair. Ben sat.
Because those words are kind of like a Jedi saying?
Partly that. It's like the old mantra. But less, I don't know, wholesome. The other thing that bothers me is that the statement could have been made about me. At least the way I was during the war with the Yuuzhan Vong. The way I was treated when I was a captive. Well, pain is all they know.
So we're going to Lord?
We're going to Lord. Go pack.
Coronet, Corellia. The war conference room was almost empty. Wedge Antilles shook hands with Admiral Carathis and her aides, then watched them depart the chamber. He began fiddling with his datapad, doubtless organizing the innumerable files he'd been beamed by various officers once his plan for the liberation of Tralis had been given tentative approval.
"We do need to wait for the YVH droids to come back for us," Leia said.
"I know that," Han protested. "I wasn't planning on popping out into the corridor while Thrakken's security team waits out there."
"Well, you looked impatient."
"Ah." Han tried to force himself to look less impatient. He couldn't. Wedge's plan occupied almost all his brain's processing power. Nor was he fooling her.
"Don't volunteer," Leia said.
"Huh? For what?"
"For Wedge's plan."
"I..."
The part of Han's mind that could convincingly spin excuses and arguments didn't have enough resources available to it. He resorted to the truth.
"I have to, Leia. That mission was made for me."
"You don't think Thrakken will find out who the pilots are? You could survive the mission, only to be blown up by remote control when returning to Corellia."
"I'm sure Wedge can..."
"General Antilles!"
It was Thrakken's voice again, still booming from the next observation room. Below, Wedge glanced up again.
"Sir,
I have a favor to ask of you. As Minister of War, something that's distinctly in your patriotic duty to do. Something you really should have done by now."
Thrakken's tone was pleasant, not at all urgent. Wedge returned his attention to his datapad.
"Let's hear it."
"You have a daughter serving with the Galactic Alliance Armed Forces under the name of Lyssa Dunter. She's assigned to the force occupying Tralis."
Even from this distance, and even seeing as little of Wedge's face as his current orientation afforded her, Han and Leia could see the man's sudden stillness. Han could imagine what Wedge was feeling. He had a sudden urge to ask Leia to cut a hole in the wall separating the two chambers so he could take a few shots. Wedge closed his datapad and tucked it into a pocket, then casually turned in his chair to face up at Thrakken.
"Yes, she's in the GA Armed Forces. A lot of Corellians are, though I'm not sure where she is right now."
"I'm going to send her a message," Thrakken said. "I'd appreciate it if you'd include a note asking her to cooperate with what I suggest."
And what are you going to suggest?
That's not really your concern.
Wedge didn't even attempt a pretense at unconcern or amusement.
Of course it is. I'm supposed to endorse whatever you suggest to her, regardless of what it is?
Yes. It's your duty. I have to insist.
Go ahead.
Now Thraken's voice sounded confused.
What? Go ahead. Insist. I'm interested in hearing this.
All right. General Antilles, acting as Chief of State and Minister of War for Corellia, I hereby order you to communicate with your daughter Sial and do your genuine best to persuade her to follow whatever course of action I recommend to her. Is that clear enough?
Absolutely.
And go to hell.
Thraken's trying to get himself killed,
Leia whispered. Han nodded.
Let's go next door and wish him luck.
Shush,
Thraken said.
Antilles, you've refused a direct order given during a military crisis, and I have it on record. Should I choose to, I can have security agents haul you away right now. I can conduct your trial within the hour and have you executed by morning.
Of course you can.
Wedge stood and stretched, extending his arms over his head and flexing his back, a gesture of supreme unconcern. Leia could almost hear the popping from his vertebrae and joints. Then Wedge relaxed into a more normal standing position.
You could also have me assassinated in a time of peace for having nicer hair than you. If I worried about that sort of thing, I'd never get any sleep. And now I'm going to explain to you why it would be a bad, bad mistake for you to do this.
Go ahead.
If I refuse, which I have, and you have me murdered, you've traded a senior officer for whatever opportunities at sabotage and information gathering a very junior officer could provide you. It's not a smart trade.
I'm no Garm Bell Iblis, but I'm the best strategist you have available. I also have friends in positions of power and influence all over the galaxy, and if I'm executed, I can't use them to your advantage. Can't issue recommendations that they use their own influence to swing their planetary governments to the Corellian viewpoint, for instance. What's the difference between your doing that and your doing what I just recommended?
Ordered, Minister. Not recommended. The difference is that asking, say, Wes Jansen to put in a good word about our cause to the military or government of his world of Ta-Nab is honorable. Asking my daughter to violate the oaths she took when she became an officer and to participate in treachery is not. Have I communicated the difference sufficiently?
Don't condescend to me, Antilles. Leave my family out of things, Sal Solo. I'm going to communicate with your daughter. I'll convince her to do what I say.
Go ahead.
Wedge shrugged.
You're not worried that I'll succeed?
You might succeed, but I won't be party to it.
There was no reply. A few seconds later, the light from Thraken's chamber, still spilling in a distorted rectangle across the main table below, switched off. Wedge walked toward the exit and disappeared out of sight below Thraken's chamber.
Wedge just got himself killed,
Leia said. Han nodded.
He's too smart not to know that. It won't be soon, though. Thraken needs Wedge for now.
But as soon as he gets angry enough to overcome his self-interest...
Yeah.
Relidir Trollis.
I am not happy, Jaina said.
She stood under sunny blue skies on a flat green lawn. Gentle breezes stirred her hair and cooled her. Beside her stood Zek, offering silent support, and occasional twinges of amusement as her mood whipped from one position to another. In the distance ahead was the white Navos Center for the Performing Arts, with its 8 beautifully fluted towers. Closer at hand, on a patch of grass unmarked by Duracrete walking trails, were the 9 X-Wings of Luke's Hardpoint Squadron. Undefended. Well, not entirely. In the astromech slot of Luke's own X-Wing sat R2-D2, and the little droid offered a plaintive trill in counterpoint to Jaina's statement.
"Where are the pilots, R2?" Jaina asked.
R2-D2's top dome swiveled, bringing his main eye cam to bear on the distant performing arts building.
"And the security detail for these snub fighters?" she asked.
The astromech turned his main eye on her and issued a series of rapid beeps and tones.
"Reassigned?"
Jaina shook her head, exasperated.
"Want me to do this one?"
Zek asked.
"Please."
Zek smiled and brought a comlink out from a pouch at his belt.
"R2, would you give me the squadron frequency?"
The astromech beeped his compliance.
"Thanks."
Zek activated the comlink.
"Zek to Hardpoint Squadron. Your new squadron commander is on site and wishes to see you immediately at your X-Wings. Immediately means 90 seconds from the end of my transmission. No one will be punished for arriving in dirty robes, formal gowns, or bubbles in bathwater. But no one wants to arrive late. That is all. Out."
He pocketed the comlink.
"Nicely done," Jaina said. "Effective, but with a potential for humor."
Zek bowed, then straightened.
"Your orders?"
"We need to find a place to house these snub fighters securely. And I don't care if they've been put out here to demonstrate our overwhelming military might and contempt for the Corellian forces. And we ought to do some drills so I can feel out the pilot's skills."
Jaina caught sight of some motion in the direction of the center. A tall, dark-skinned human male, clad only in a white towel which he held around his waist with both hands, was running in their direction.
"It's going to be an interesting set of exercises."
Battle Carrier Dodonna, Orbiting Trollis. Ensign Lissa Dunton and her Quarren wingman rose toward the field, holding the atmosphere within Dodonna's main belly hangar. With casual ease, they reduced velocity as they neared the glowing opening, popped up through the field to allow the air resistance to slow them down another crucial few kilometers per hour, and floated on repulsor lifts to their designated landing zone. Moments later, they raised their cockpits. Crew members, rushing forward, hung ladders in place, allowing them to exit their vehicles. Mechanics arrived, plugging in diagnostic units, beginning refueling. Her Quarren wingman pulled off his helmet and issued a slurping sigh of relief. His facial tentacles wiggled in the cold artificial breeze blowing through the hangars.
"Bath," he said. "I need to submerge. I'd kill to submerge."
He turned and began a brisk march toward the doors out of the hangar. Sial grinned after him. Long patrols were hard on the Quarren and their kindred, the Mon Calamari. They dehydrated faster than humans. She pulled off her own helmet and decided that her wingman's decision was the best one, though. A thorough cleansing after hours of fruitless touring around the edges of the Corellia system would be great for morale.
"Ensign Dunton?"
The chief mechanic, a lean man with dark eyes, approached her with his diagnostic data pad in hand.
"Can I speak to you for a moment?"
"Of course."
She shook her hair out. Short as it was, it didn't give her too much grief on long missions. And at least this time she donned her helmet so that her bangs didn't cause her additional trouble.
"You usually work with the X-Wing units, don't you?"
"Yes, Ensign. But everybody's being shifted around to cross-train while we have some downtime. I put in a request to work with the Eta-5s today."
Sial eyed his datapad.
Is there a problem with my interceptor?
Not exactly. He moved close and lowered his voice so the rest of the crew couldn't make out his words. Actually, I just wanted to bring you some greetings from home. She gave him a sharp look.
Greetings from Raltir?
Greetings, he said, from Corellia. Perhaps we should talk somewhere private. An hour later, Vibro-Sword Leader, a tall human with graying hair and features suggesting that he was an actor hired to play a squadron leader, leaned over the interrogation table toward Sial and asked, "So you shot him?" Beside him sat a human woman, dark-skinned, with big eyes that looked bright and uncritical enough to belong to someone much younger. Sial had never seen her before. She wore civilian clothes, all in blacks and light blues. Her face was expressionless, though her eyes were on Sial, awaiting her response. Sial nodded. Her face felt tight, especially around her eyes from the brief bit of crying she'd done when no one was looking, and her bangs, now lank with perspiration, flopped into her eyes. She wished that Vibro-Sword Leader would just take his chair and stay in it. All his standing up, doubtless to appear to be more intimidating, was getting on her nerves. Plus, she could use a friend right now, and it sure wasn't him.
"I still don't understand," the woman said. "Why did you shoot him?" "He lunged for my blaster pistol,"
Sial said. "Why did you have a blaster pistol?" Leader asked.
"So I could take him into custody."
"No," the woman said. "You took it out to take him into custody. Why did you have it in the first place?"
"I always do," Sial explained. "When I got old enough to begin dating, my father insisted that I carry one."
That was a small lie. Her father had insisted that she carry two, but she'd made do with one most of the time since leaving home.
"And you drew on him because he was trying to suborn you," the woman continued.
Sial nodded.
"Do a few things for us," he said, meaning the Corellians.
The woman looked skeptical.
"Ensign Dunton, you're a very low-ranking officer in a carrier full of people who could do the GA more harm than you if they were turned. Why you? What makes you so vulnerable to this sort of attempt?"
"Your leg," Leader said.
"What?"
Sial turned an uncomprehending expression on him. "Your leg," he repeated. Sial looked down. Her right leg was vibrating again. She glared at it, and it stopped.
"Answer the question, please," the woman said.
Sial looked at her, then turned apologetic eyes toward Leader.
"I'm Corellian."
He glanced toward his datapad.
"Right. Born on Corellia. Raised on Raltir."
"No. Born on Corellia, raised on Corellia. The recruiting officer assumed and put down that I was raised on Raltir because I have Raltir citizenship, but I didn't get it the usual way. I bought it."
The woman said,
"What else in your record is incorrect?"
"Nothing. But Lyssa Dunton, well, that isn't the name I was born with."
Leader scowled at her and sat again.
"You achieved an officer's rank on a falsified name. We're deep into court-martial territory here."
"No, Lyssa Dunton is my real name. I changed it legally at a court on Raltir that is known for being horribly disorganized. I knew it would take years for the records to reach the GA military. I changed it to avoid comparisons with my father, so I could achieve a reputation of my own."
"What's your real—" the woman checked herself. "Your original name?"
"Sial Antilles.
Both the woman and leader blinked. The woman reacted first.
Corellian and Tilly's, you aren't by chance...
He's my father.
And Iella and Tilly's your mother.
I'm surprised you know that name.
The woman nodded.
So the mechanic tries to persuade you to perform unspecified actions for the Corellian government.
Sial nodded.
And he threatened to do things to my family if I didn't comply.
Leader gave Sial a hard stare.
So you've just gotten your family killed. You refused. That agent superiors will now begin the purge. Good going.
Sial settled back in her chair, putting a precious few more centimeters distance between herself and her squadron leader.
I hope not.
The smart thing to do, leader said, would have been to go along with whatever he said and bring intelligence in later.
Sial shook her head.
I'm no good at that sort of thing. Don't you think I know what I'm capable of? My mother was in intelligence. My sister got those genes, I guess. I wouldn't be able to pull it off. And in the meantime, that man would have been free on this ship, maybe sabotaging the starfighters of my friends. No, that's not smarter.
Sial heard her voice rise in indignation.
I'll tell you what, leader said. We'll look into this. If you're lying, you get a dishonorable discharge and whatever criminal punishment you deserve. If you're telling the truth, things are much better. You get an honorable discharge and can go home to Corellia and fly with your daddy's squadrons and give us a crack at you. Either way, this is the last day you'll wear the Galactic Alliance uniform. Dismissed.
Sial tightened the muscles of her face, struggling to hold back new tears that wanted to stream forth, and started to rise.
Sit,
the woman said. She turned to leader.
You, be a good boy and go away.
Leader gaped at her.
You,
the woman smiled at him, showing teeth.
The correct response is yes, ma'am. Now go.
Leader evaluated her expression, then hurriedly rose.
Yes, ma'am.
The woman waited until he was out of the interrogation room. She returned her attention to Sial.
Yes, we'll verify the details of your story. If they check out, you'll be returned to active service. But I doubt you'll be returned to Vibrosword Squadron. I suspect that it can be considered a hostile environment for you now.
I think you're right.
Your leg is going again.
The woman turned her attention to the data pad in front of her.
It says here that you were offered the chance to join a new squadron handling the first deployment of the Aleph-class fighters. Is that correct?
Sial nodded.
I didn't want to, though. I've played around with Aleph simulators. They've got plenty of speed, but they maneuver like big plugs of Duracrete.
And if your only options are to fly Alephs or work as a communications officer aboard a sensor ship...
Alephs sound great, ma'am.
Spoken like a true Antilles.
The woman closed her datapad.
You're from intelligence, aren't you? I would have thought that my own squadron leader would have been the sympathetic one, and you would have been a plasteel neck about the whole thing.
The woman nodded.
Never can tell how the past is going to affect things, can you?
She rose.
I don't know what your squadron leader's problem is. Jealousy. Or maybe he needs to be in complete control, and the fact that you didn't divulge about your famous father constitutes a betrayal. As for me...
She offered Sial a slight smile.
Once upon a time, not long after the New Republic won Coruscant that first time, I flew with your father for a few months... I've known some of his pilots considerably longer. I know what sort of children he'll have raised. If you're really Sial Antilles, I suspect you're in the clear.
On her way out the door, she added,
and you might as well legally change your name back. Your secret's out.